Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 377, being recorded on the 12th of May, 2021. I'm Sujeet, and on Teams with me, we have Cynthia, Kale, Evan, and Kendall. And we're here to have kind of a roundtable discussion today on a very special topic that's pretty hot these days, the topic of NFTs, or non-fungible tokens, as our resident blockchain expert Kale will explain to us in just a minute. But before that, Evan, I believe you put something in terms of news from this last week.
Yeah, this was just kind of, so some of this that, you know, I'd heard internally, but I hadn't heard us disclose it externally. So I thought it was some interesting numbers to go through. The first is that, you know, we're predicting we're going to be building 50 to 100 new DC data centers every year, which is crazy numbers. Right, we've already got 200-ish or so. We have 165,000 miles of subsea cable. And then we also are, and this one's more of a feature thing, but we are on target to have availability zones in every country in which we operate by the end of calendar year 2021. Right. And all new regions that we launch will have availability zones. This is one of the things we get knocked on periodically, right? Hey, this data center that was one of the early data centers, right? It doesn't have zones, or it's missing this. But I just thought seeing some of those numbers on paper was just amazing, right? I mean, you think about the amount of compute power that spins up when we're adding 50 to 100 data centers every year.
How many servers go into a data center approximately?
Oh, I don't even know.
It's got to be 10,000 at least.
Probably something like that.
All I'm thinking about is when I'm provisioning resources in Azure, that list for location is going to keep getting so
just
long.
Keeps getting longer and longer. That reminds me, we used to have this. So we had a bug many, many, many years ago where, and I can't remember which region it was that was in the top of the list at the time, but we kept having capacity issues in that region. Because everybody that would just go, I just want to create a resource to test something, would pick that region. And so we ended up having to do some stuff to sort of change it and change it globally. And you show local and, you're enabled for different ones. We did a whole bunch of thinking of that. But it's just that, it's amazing how impactful that drop down is.
Awesome. And I believe Kendall has something as well.
Yeah, so just wanted to call out really quickly that the Azure Static Web Apps is now GA. And so if you're interested in building those kind of full stack web apps with the pre-built kind of pre-rendered static front ends, you can now do that in a GA fashion. So if you've been using that in preview or anything like that, just wanted to call that out there. And a lot of the times, with this, you can take advantage of a lot of other features. So a lot of customers will use Azure Functions and some of those serverless API models to back in this. So I just wanted to call that out, and we'll make sure to drop the notes in the chat about how you can leverage this if you're interested.
So how does the static website work with something functions, functions, whatever behind it, which is not static? Does it change the content of the static files?
So I think you can just integrate it from your front end and call out to an Azure serverless, function. So maybe not the content being generated on the front end is static, right? But you can integrate it with APIs, clicking in or going to another call out too.
Gotcha.
They're typically AngularJS front end or something, or some JavaScript front end. And it's, I believe this one's it's served out of GitHub, right? I think this is the one where it's integrated with GitHub.
Yeah, I don't think.
Okay.
You can host them in Azure Storage, but I don't think that's static, the static hosting in Azure Storage is GA.
That's different. The one in storage. You're talking about the one in App Services. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you kind of push your code to GitHub and you tell App Service, that's where my code is. It pulls it in and just runs it at runtime, and that's it. You get
interesting.
The whole website. It's pretty cool, actually. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And I want to make one comment back to the data center discussion earlier. So just because data center is not the same as adding regions, right? I mean, we're adding right. a lot of data centers to existing regions because they're running out of capacity, as you say, in regions. And so they have to keep adding more and more data centers, you know, just to keep up with the capacity. So a lot of those data centers just go to existing regions. But yeah, I do agree the number of regions is going to increase as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be clear, before I get yelled at later. Doesn't mean we're running out of capacity. We are just trying to stay ahead of capacity demand.
Thank you, Mr. CXP.
You heard it here first. Evan Baslick was the one who said
it. Who's that, Evan? Yeah, he used to work here. He's not here anymore.
And hey, Russell, good to see you. So let's jump onto our special topic today, which is NFTs. So we'll ask Kale to first expand on that acronym for us, as we like to do to get things started.
Yeah, sure. So happy to talk here today about this. So NFTs, and we always get dinged for using abbreviation. So it's that represents what's called a non-fungible token, as Sajid mentioned in the title. And what that means is there's been a lot of hype around this in the media space and internet space and whatnot around these things. But just to kind of set a base level here about what these things are, they're basically a token, a digital token. So it's a piece of code that basically will guarantee a uniqueness to something. So a really abstract definition is it's kind of like a license or like something like that that goes along with something. So to put that in more concrete terms, if you think about something that's the canonical use case, like a baseball card, right, that we used to collect as kids, some of us who are older, but basically we had this physical asset, right, and there were only so many of those, and it turns out that 30 or 40 years later, if you have certain ones, they're actually worth a lot of money because they were scarce or because there was only so many of those created or whatnot. Same concept, except for it's digital. Right. So one of the big ones that came out here is NBA Top Shots. So what that is LeBron James, dunks a basketball and there's a 10-second clip of that, a GIF. That thing can be turned into an NFT, which basically means we signed 100 copies of this GIF. And now we've minted those as this person and handed those out to people. Now people have those. It doesn't mean that they actually own that GIF or that image or any of the likeness or any of that thing to it. It just means they're one of 100 who has this thing that was created on this date. And maybe in the future that becomes worth more money or something. Who knows? So they're paying fees for these.
This sort of feels like, you go out and you can buy the artwork. And when you look, it says one of whatever, and you don't really know for sure that it's actually one of, 10,000, right? They could have printed 50 runs of one of 10,000, right? You don't know. In this case, there's basically a way to go back to it and say, yes, this is one of the first 100, guaranteed. Here's the proof in the chain of ownership, right?
That's right. And it also allows you to like resell it, right? So you as the owner are the only one who can now resell that, right? So if you said, hey, I now own this thing and now there's only 50 of these and turns out the price goes up. So now I want to sell it to Sajid and I can charge a higher price and say, hey, if you want this, there's only 50 of them. And so now you'll pay me more money for it or whatnot. The interesting thing is like at what Evan mentions, though, like the permeance of this. So this gets into some of the like looking through some of the FUD that's going on, FUD being fear, uncertainty and doubt. But basically, if you said, I guarantee I'm using this, let's say NBA Top Shots, for instance, that there's a blockchain behind that, right, called Flow that's using it. But if that thing ceases to exist or something in the future, so does that thing that you have attached to it, right? And this is where people need to like kind of look at the fine print and understand what they're getting into of like, what is the back end of this thing? Where does it reside? Is it guaranteed it's going to be there for the rest of my life? Which is the promise that most put on these,
Yeah. So if that goes out of business, you have no thing.
Right. So a lot of the ones that are a lot more like what I would say reputable or people should be looking at are ones that use public blockchains because those ones, have a less chance of going down. Right. There's not a single company behind it that can say, hey, we're done with this because it's not making money or whatnot. Those are going to be there because they're supported by a much larger global community. So those are good. Right. And if you have stuff up there, you can pretty much bank that they're going to be there. And I'm not dumping on these other ones. There's a bunch of these platforms spinning up. I think they're trying to solve specific problems, and this is a very like emerging space. So they're trying to make them go cheaper and faster and do all kinds of different things. I think that's fine. I just think people need to be aware of like what they're buying. Don't spend $1 million on something if you don't know where it actually resides, you know? Like,
can I ask a question? I know Cynthia put her hand up first, but I really did have a question. If you could see my face, I just raised my hand yet in Teams. Okay, so I have two questions that I think are both relevant. So one is, this can only be things that are digitally stored assets. Like, it's not going to be a non-digital asset, because if I buy a baseball, I don't know how it could have, like, the baseball is not going to cease to exist when the digital identity. So like, I would assume it has to be something that you can buy or sell online.
That's not 100% true. In a majority of cases, it is something digital, like you said. But for instance, take your case, like a baseball, right? That baseball right today, if you get a baseball signed by some famous baseball player, right? Usually to have that be worth money, you have a certificate or something that goes along with it, certifies this guy signed it, we saw it, all that stuff. This could be that, right? So you can tie those things together. And the way those get bound is probably your next question is, usually we have some sort of unique fingerprint from that thing that we use as the hash that goes along with the certificate. So they're inextricably linked.
But when, okay, so I guess, so let me understand. So like, I thought what you were saying is when the identity doesn't exist, the actual asset dissolves along with it. But what you're saying is the guarantee or guarantor that comes along with that asset would cease to exist. Therefore, you couldn't necessarily validate the baseball in the future if that, you know, blockchain provider was to no longer exist.
That's right.
The identity would lose its value. So it wouldn't necessarily be like the baseball is no longer signed by that person or the baseball doesn't exist. It would just be you can no longer use that identity as a way to validate that that ball is worth XYZ or that it's one of, you know, 1,000.
100%.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. And is – okay. It makes sense. I get it. What kind of – yeah. Okay. So does it, I'm trying to like, who's maintaining, like, is it a specific organization that wants to use this as an identity mechanism would, you know, go out and be a customer of like Ethereum or implement Ethereum or one of these other blockchain providers within a custom application? Or is there like a single source that is, you know, maintaining all of this? I guess I'm trying to figure out who from that perspective, you know, is somebody at this a specific company implementing this system, or is it like there's a single provider of this to all external organizations? Does that make sense?
So there's some, I'll take a crack at it. There's some standards around this technology, like what is an NFT? Obviously, it must possess certain attributes, like be guaranteed unique, be immutable, have one owner, you know, all these kind of attributes about it. So those get implemented typically in smart contracts or something like smart contracts, depending on the technology being used. Ethereum obviously uses smart contracts, but others use different technology that's similar to smart contract technology for that. So there's a standard around it. Now, one beef I have with it right now, or one thing I worry about, is like interop, right? So like, you pick a provider, well, tomorrow I want to move it to a different one. Can I do that, right? And there's work going on in this space as well to make that something, these bridges, we'll call them, between these blockchains, because they're all using different technology to define what's an NFT. But you could foreseeably, like technically, build a bridge between them to say, hey, I'm going to push this thing over here and it's going to go onto this other chain and then it disappears on this one. So that's, I worry about that and I hope we get there.
Wait, sorry, one follow-up question just to make sure I get it. I guess my question is, if I go buy the baseball, do I, Kindle, as a consumer, say I want some kind of NFT, I'm going to go to a third party and have them generate one for me, or would it be the seller generates it for all of them, and then it's tied, like, who's responsible for the initial creation of the identity for the purchaser?
Yeah, it's usually the creator. So if the person's signing something or if they created something, it's the creators who's responsible to create it. Yeah.
And they're going to use probably third-party technology to generate that, right? They don't have to necessarily implement their own NFT provider, I guess.
That's right. Okay. I call them like NFT platforms, but yeah, that's what's emerging, these platforms that enable this. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Okay, that makes sense.
Lots of hands up.
I'm curious, going back to like the previous point where you say for that you can purchase an NFT for that 10-second GIF, but that does not translate to ownership of the GIF, then what is the appeal purely for like social status and being able to say that I own this NFT that's associated with that GIF? Because I'm also curious, like, can it become part of ownership as well using NFT?
That's true, right? So the licensing that you're talking about, or the copyright, essentially, to this thing, this asset, right? In this case, a GIF. It can be defined by the creator, right? I could say, hey, I created this GIF of me dancing, and I only created one of them, and I created an NFT for it, and I sold it out here, right? And whoever gets it can have the actual source for that, and they own the whole thing, the whole asset. They can do whatever they want with it. I could also say, no, you're not allowed to do anything with it. You're allowed to display it, and here's the license for what you can do with that thing. But you are one of 100 who own one of these things, right? Which makes them semi-scarce in some people's minds, I guess, you know.
So what you're saying is that, like, NFT can define to the level of granularity of what each type of ownership can do, that you can essentially have, like, tiered members of, if you're like a gold member, you can do all these things, and if you're a silver member, you can only like display.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Got it.
So it's not as clear, I think, upfront as like what people are buying, and that's why I say you got to kind of look what you're getting into, right? I'm not saying these are bad or anything. I think it's kind of cool technology. It's just understanding what are my rights when I purchase this thing. What does this entail me to do? What am I allowed to do with this? You know.
So am I right in thinking there's nothing in the technology to prevent somebody duplicating the thing itself? It's just all about the NFT that's linked with it that you can't copy and you can't compromise in it. And it's that's the valuable thing, really, is the token that says what the provenance is.
That's right. Right. So, for instance, if I hand some superstar a baseball, back to the earlier example, and have him sign it, that signature is important, right? You could take one and duplicate the signature and say, hey, I got the same thing. But this one actually has proof of whoever digitally signed that, that this thing actually happened, right? Like, this is the person who signed it. So in this case, maybe the NBA, you know, for something like that. You can't duplicate the NBA's keys, right? So you could never impersonate yourself as the NBA. You could take that GIF and say, oh, I'm going to do the same thing, but it won't be signed by the NBA, so it's less useful.
So it is an exact parallel to masterpieces that have been drawn at some point, and then the prints that are made, and forgeries that can be copied and displayed and what have you. It's exactly the same kind of thing. And I guess I don't understand what some of the reasons as to why people pay so much money for something that looks identical, but actually its provenance is there, and that's what you're paying for. It's that value. It's a strange concept, isn't it?
Well, the interesting thing with like the NBA, and if you look at how the cards, we'll call them cards, like digital cards have happened, think about like when you were a kid, if you bought like baseball cards, we didn't know what was in there, right? You buy a pack and then you had to buy a bunch of packs so that you could get this whole series, right? Same thing happens here, right? So they're doing that same concept with these. So you'll buy a pack of these things, maybe it's gifts, but there's like only one that does this one certain thing. And so you have to keep buying those packs or trading them with your friends to get the whole series. So there's that gaming spin on it as well, you know.
And for our UK listeners, he's talking about baseball, which is a game we don't have over here. So the equivalent is football cards, right? Or soccer, as they know it.
For our international crowd, yes.
Yeah,
Russ, when you said the thing about the art, that is funny, though, because I did watch a documentary on Netflix about, like, a huge forgery scheme and, like, the provenance and that concept, and that's exactly what I was thinking of. It's like, oh, I bet you could use this in that scenario to prove out, you know, the provenance of something. So that's really interesting.
So this sort of, as I listen to this, and I tie it back to when we had somebody on to talk about using blockchain for identity stuff, does that say that at the end of the day, that identity work is in essence an NFT on me, right? Like that's my proof, that's my provenance that I'm who I say I am. Like, is that sort of, I mean, it's the same concept, or is there some fundamental piece that I'm missing here?
No, I think from a high level, it's probably right. But the clear definition of what an NFT, a non-fungible token, is something that could be traded or moved around. Like, the ownership of that thing could move. I don't know that we want to get into, you know, that concept here. But
as far as the underlying...
Evan's wife is like, okay, sounds good. Yeah, he wants swap. To trade.
Yeah, exactly. It's been 18 months in the same house. She's ready to swap me. But I mean, the fundamental technology and sort of the interaction back with the blockchain, right? That is the same there, right? And so obviously they diverge at some point, right? But But the way that you validate identity, the way that you validate, you know, provenance, all that stuff, that's the same functionally, if I'm understanding you right.
Yeah, the digital signatures that go along with this stuff, same technology, right, that's used in core blockchain, cryptocurrency, everything else, same thing.
So it's just you're creating a unique identity for these gifts, right? Yep. Same way as you're creating the that ties together nicely in my head. Thank you.
We're saying like gifts, like the little images from the computer, right? That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. It's such an interesting example. Yes. I was just making sure. I was like, is that what we're saying? Are we talking about gifts? But I guess we're going back to the basketball example when we say that, right? The basketball.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, before we get into
Azure, I'm not a GIF. I'm a real person. I promise.
Before we get into the Azure spit on this, one other thing I wanted to mention that'll really blow your mind is so we talk about non-fungible tokens. There's also a thing called fungible tokens, right? And a fungible token, you can think about a fungible token as cash, right? Is it a really clear concept of that? If I have a dollar bill and Sajid has a dollar bill, they're essentially the same thing. They're not pets, they're cattle, essentially. We can just interchange them and they're still worth a dollar, right? Everything's the same. Where a non-fungible is totally unique in the world, right? This one thing, there's only one of it or 100 of it or whatever. So the interesting thing is some of the token technology and standards are now allowing, we're building technology to nest these things. So for instance, I could have let's talk about cats here. I could have a non-fungible cat, like a CryptoKitty. And for those who don't know what that is, I'll drop it in the notes. But CryptoKitties are NFTs. They're basically like a little Tamagotchi that runs on blockchain. So basically, these NFTs could now hold fungible tokens. So food, the cat could have food that actually is fungible. So you could build these nested hierarchies. And whenever I sell that cat, his food goes along with him. Right. So there's some crazy ideas coming around here to mix these different types of token technologies.
Now my head hurts. Thanks, Kale.
Azure spin. All right. So the Azure spin on this, people always say, why is Azure? Why is Microsoft even interested in this stuff? Well, one is for the blockchain angle. Obviously, the blockchain networks that power these kind of things. It happens that most of these are public, and most of the work we do in blockchain is private blockchains or consortiums. But we do have stuff built into our tooling to work with public blockchains. So the same technology, building smart contracts, all the stuff we've done over the years can be used here as well. So all the existing tooling and things that we built for specific blockchains still work here. Everything's great. The same technology for like key management and things like that. So with the people who are building these NFT platforms, they need ways to handle wallets and keys and all these digital signatures. Technology we've been working on for blockchain as well. So there's definitely work going on there with our partners to help power those and use Azure. So that's kind of like the Azure spin of why we would be involved here. We have a lot of cool tech to do things all the way from confidential compute to our Azure Key Vault with our key management to just general compute to run nodes to do this stuff. And then our dev tooling is kind of our thing in the game there.
Kale, I know there has been a lot of conversation around just the environmental impact with blockchain in general. And I know like Microsoft has been a forerunner in like making sure we have our environmental and just climate change policies in place to go carbon negative. So how do these play together? Or are there some misconceptions of like mining requires a lot of energy?
Yeah, so this is a good question, right? Because again, a lot of these run on public networks, public blockchains, where there's thousands or tens of thousands of computers. And in current form today, running this thing called proof of work, which basically is a lot of compute power, right? So these machines are being hammered. So that's a lot of carbon footprint, right? And even though we do small transactions for NFTs, it's still using that global network, right? So the meter's still running over there. So a couple things around this, and NFTs have gotten a lot of heat for this, right? Because if people start using these a lot, it's like, well, you're not really helping the environment here because you're contributing to some bad stuff here. So a couple things. One is the blockchain technology is evolving into things called proof of stake and other different consensus algorithms, which are much more lightweight. We can run them on Raspberry Pis, for instance. We don't need like superpower computers and all that kind of stuff to do it. So that's one angle that's continuing to evolve. There's already people running some of this stuff out there for even some of these NFT platforms. But there's also this thing called sidechains, which have developed. And a side chain is basically something that could hang off of one of these main chains, but don't have to interact with it so much, right? So the side chain is there to provide validity to what's happening over on this chain over here, but it doesn't need to do transactions constantly back into there. So you could still argue that, hey, you still have a dependency on it, so it still needs to run. But I would say that as that one changes to proof of stake or other technologies that makes it lighter carbon footprint, the sidechain gets more benefit from that. So that's a good thing. The other thing is these private networks, right? So I mentioned some of these platforms, you have to know what you're getting into. Some of them are just running their own custom blockchain, which is very lightweight. So those guys will also play that angle and say, hey, well, ours isn't as carbon, you know, footprint because we have a much smaller network. You could play devil's advocate both ways there and say, well, yeah, but if it's smaller, then I have more risk because I'm more dependent on you as opposed to some global supercomputer type thing. So there's a bunch of different ways to look at it. The other thing that's kind of coming forward is a carbon tax, which doesn't really help the carbon footprint, but it's actually helping, you know, replant trees and pay for this upfront. So for instance, if every time I want to transfer an NFT, I have to pay a carbon tax because I'm using this big network and that's enforced by the protocol. So there's no way to get out of it. You have to pay for that to help the network and help the environment. That's another angle that's helping. Again, I feel like that's more of a short to medium term thing. The longer term is change the backbone of some of these public networks so that we're less carbon footprint heavy and solve the problem.
Can I just ask a quick one on that, on the environmental thing? I know with Ethereum too, they're moving to proof of stake, right? Is that right? I just wanted to know what the difference between proof of work, proof of stake is. I know there's a big environmental shift, but what's, you know, in a very layman's terms, what's the difference between the two?
Yeah, so real quick, in a proof of work system, which exists today for the big like Bitcoin and public Ethereum and others, they basically compete to be the one to write the next block. So you send a transaction to say, hey, I want to move an NFT from Evan to Cynthia, right? And they pay a little fee to use the transaction to put that on a network. That transaction gets packaged into a block, but who gets to write that block is a miner. And that's when you hear about mining. So they compete to be the miner, and that requires a lot of compute. So they have to do a really hard math problem. In proof of stake, it's more like this. People essentially have currency in this network, like Bitcoin or Ethereum or something, and they stake it, which basically means they escrow it. So they would say, hey, I want to be a participant in this network, and here's my 2 Bitcoin or 2 Ethereum or whatever. And that thing gets locked up so they can't touch it. Now, every time a block gets produced, a new block needs to get produced, everybody benefits, right? So instead of me making $1 million, I think it's like maybe $50,000 or something on Ethereum to mine the next block. Instead of me making that, I just make a microtransaction, but everybody gets a part of that transaction. And if I don't keep my machine up that basically validates that transaction, then I get penalized. So it starts to take some of my stake. Hence the proof of stake thing, right? So if I misbehave, some of my stake is taken away from me and given back to other people as a reward. So again, and you don't need a lot of, there's no competition going on there, right? Because everybody's just validating a transaction. So it's a very small amount of compute work that needs to happen.
Great. Thank you. I think that makes it a little bit clearer. I think I've got some more readings to do afterwards.
Sorry if that's not 100% clear, but I'll send some links in the show notes.
That'd be great. Thanks. I've been trying to get my head around this in the last few weeks. Actually, it's been interesting.
This is great, Kale. It's always neat to sort of loop back around and see the interactions, both, you know, some of the stuff going on in, I mean, not that it's unreal, but the real world, right? You know, and then how that sort of ties back to the technologies and what cloud computing and Azure are enabling and stuff. It's neat to me to see those connections, because you don't always, until you really drill into them, I don't always see them personally, right? I hadn't ever made that NFT to identity, you know, connection till we talked about it today. And that's like, oh, wow. Like, definitely appreciate you coming in let's leading the conversation today on this. You're always here, you know, and explain this. Again, my head hurts a little bit, but I think I feel a little bit better this time than I did last time. And I felt better last time than this time.
Yeah.
Any last comments?
I'll definitely send some links through. And there's also a really funny video. So for people who want to see something really funny, there was SNL, Saturday Night Live, did a skit that's like a parody of an Eminem song to What's an NFT. It's very funny. I'll send that along as well.
Oh, I missed that. I saw where Elon Musk was on and he played some financial advisor on Weekend Update, but I did not see the song. Yes. Well,
the Doji Father, I think it was, wasn't it?
What's that?
I think he called himself the Doji Father.
Something like that. Yeah. Cool. Any last questions for Kale before we call it a day? Cynthia's just cracking up. She's been laughing the whole time today.
She's holding a lot of NFTs, that's why, you know.
Okay, cool. All right. Thanks, folks.
Thanks, everyone.
See y'all later.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.